Blog Talk Radio.
Project U Radio, and it is Thursday night. Of course, I'm Lynn Alexander, and I have Paul Corman Roberts on, as usual. That was, I don't know, I guess you have to have a sense of humor about it. That was from So I Married an Axe Murderer. Some of you might remember that movie from, I don't know, years ago. It's actually a pretty funny scene. He's, making fun of a few of us, I think. Anyway, I will go ahead and get Paul on here, which is always a treat. He's waiting patiently for us to get started, and I hope he's here. Good evening, Paul.
I'm here. Who was being made fun of in that song?
Well, it's sort of the scene in the movie where Mike Myers goes. He goes to a hipster poet kind of club, and he does these performance pieces. And in the movie, it's actually pretty funny because he's got like a projector, you know, and he says like, you know, you stole my heart and my cat, and there's like a, you know, a flash of a woman holding a cat, and yeah, it's just, you know, they're all sort of wearing the clothing that you often see there and snapping their fingers, and you know, I have to say I can think of a lot of people that it reminded me of that segment, so I thought it was funny.
Come on, name names.
The thing is, if you can't laugh at yourself and yourselves, and you can't, you know, if you don't have a sense of humor about it, and you take yourself so seriously, then you know what? Fuck it. I mean, really.
Laugh at my beret. Don't you laugh at my fucking beret.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what he's doing. I mean, you know, just I don't know. I thought it was hilarious. I mean, I hadn't thought about it in a while, and yeah, but it is. It's just, you know, sort of his mannerisms, and yeah, I don't know. I mean, not that I have anything against, you know, the whole, the whole scene. But no, it's funny. So tonight, I mean, I don't know, and it had to do with women, that particular piece. And as you know, this evening, one of the things that we have on the agenda is, we sort of call it the idea of affirmative action. Affirmative action being sort of a contrived way of skewing numbers to sort of address a problem. I mean, it can apply to anything. It can apply to race. It can apply to gender. I mean, it's basically a, you know, taking a system and with the desire to, you know, change the demographics or the numbers and say, you know what, maybe, you know, like, for example, if you say for a college, you know, you have to have so many percentage of women, what that means to a lot of people is, well, if you don't get qualified applicants, that you might lower your – admission standards because you have a quota. And that's, I think, the idea that people, you know, don't like about that, you know, don't like about anything that has to do with quotas and affirmative action, because there's sort of this belief that what that leads to is a contrived sense of evaluation, you know, where instead of saying, hey, let's look at this person, evaluate this candidate on the basis of their performance or their grades or their, you know, their work, you know, where you're saying, ah, you know, damn, we gotta have five women, so you're on board.
We gotta fill the quota.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, what if, I don't know, but what if, but let's say, you know, let's say there's a certain misrepresentation in a category, but I don't know. I mean, it's, where do you draw the line? I mean, you have to have a standard of excellence, I guess, in whatever particular field we're talking about where there are such quotas. I don't know. Are we thinking about how it applies particularly to, oh, I don't know, the small press? or do you see it as an overall, do you see it as bigger than that?
Well, you know, the thing, I mean, that's the argument. The argument is that it takes away from merit, that it takes the decision-making away from, you know, the people charged with making decisions. But then, you know, the idea also is that, you know, obviously there's an attempt to correct, you know, disparity, correct injustice, correct that situation. But there's also the idea that participation begets more participation. You know, if we can get five women on the football team, then maybe next year, you know, women will say, hey, you know what, hey, there are five chicks on the football team. I've always wanted to try out. Now maybe I feel a little more comfortable doing so because I see that women are doing it. And then you have six and then you have seven. And the idea is that at a certain point, it doesn't matter anymore and you can take away, you know, that system that you put in place to try to correct something, you know.
Women should have as much opportunity to gain dementia in their early 40s as men do.
Right. Well, and then the third piece of it sort of is, I mean, there's the criticism and then there's, you know, the positive idea, the arguments that people have made. Then there's the idea that there are a lot of people who say, you know what, we shouldn't touch anything. We shouldn't, you know, we should just let things run their course. Eventually, you know, things will level out. Eventually, you know, don't make a problem where it isn't a problem. And then I guess you could say there's sort of the fourth way of looking at it, that, you know, so what? So you have, you know, 80% men, 20% female. So you have 70% men. You know, really, what's the difference? It's really about, you know, the performance or whatever is supposed to be done. And I think that's the view that a lot of people take with seem to take with small press when they take a look at submissions as an editor, or they let's say you're looking at a publication and you're reading, you know, fiction, and you say, wow, there are two females and there are, you know, 25 guys. You know, you might not even give it any thought. You might not even notice. You know, you might say,
yeah,
well, so what? Who cares? I'm not here to care about what gender you are. I'm not here to care about anything about you. This isn't personal. This isn't about the writer. This is about the work, and that's where
this
we
is about the process. The process of culling out the good literature from the middle of the road literature.
Right. And I don't know. So, you know, there are a lot of, like I said, a lot of different opinions and a lot of different theories as to why things are the way they are, why certain publications have more submissions from men versus women, and why some maybe have more from women. You know, there are a lot of presses out there that are the other way, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, we can't always point the finger and say, oh, the entire independent press is, you know, completely, you know, skewed in one direction. You know, there are a lot of particularly, I don't want to say, but particularly a lot of female-run presses that, you know, that actively solicit submissions from females, that go out of their way to try to be mindful of that, you know, maybe reach out to females. You know, it's
notable that Kelsey Street Press, based up here in Berkeley, is first of all, it's the oldest feminist experimental poetry press in the United States. One and not obviously not the only one anymore, but definitely a pioneer, a one of a kind that's still going very strong. You know, by learning over the years to adapt and reach out and integrate into the community. And probably when you folks get out here, we should go visit the lending library at the Berkeley Public Library, because it's basically a book installation that's curated by Kelsey Street Press. And there's nothing quite like it. I think you guys are going to enjoy this. But the inside festival is coming up aside. I think it's notable that particular press, Kelsey Street Press, has begun soliciting manuscripts, I think for the first time in their history, from men in their first book, their first poetry collection contest that they are running. And I learned this just this past Sunday, that they will consider collections from men as long as it's experimental poetry.
Right. Well, no, that's cool. I mean, I wonder what was behind their decision to do that.
You know, I don't know. Maybe it's the feeling that they need to, you know, if they, I, you know, it's hard to say. You know, I don't sit on the editorial board. I know some people who do. I could talk to them, and they might even have a full answer for me. I think the opportunities for women are more equalized or more relatively equal in, I guess, what's frequently perceived as the larger or hard copy small press. I think the disparity we're talking about is primarily, seems to me to be primarily on the internet and with the internet publications and periodicals and a lot of the type of content that's being done. And it's not that there aren't female contributors on the internet. There are certainly in more mainstream. But when you talk, but when we're getting into this realm that calls itself underground literature, suddenly it skews to those types of numbers, 80% men, 20%. And I, you know, anecdotally, I can back it up myself from when I was a poetry editor at Cherry Bleeds. And even now, at Full of Crow, doing fiction at Full of Crow, it's a little bit more even, but the men still outnumber the women in terms of the submissions. And I think, you know, people have over the years found ways to balance it out. You learn to balance your presentation. Not everything has to be submission-based either. You don't always have to cull through the list. And my approach is I certainly go through the list, and I am conscious of what are very good stories within a slush pile I have. But if I don't feel that there's enough there, if I feel like there's stories that are good, or if I feel like there needs to be a balance in representation, and I can go solicit pieces also from writers. That's another way. And that you can all... That's an editorial choice, and I guess that is a form that could be considered a form of affirmative action, but it's also serving the larger word at the same time. So I'm basically, you know, I'm using a couple of different processes to work with there, and I think there's a lot of other editors who do it a little bit like that too. You can mix and match. You know, you try to have your antenna open to, you know, the good new stuff that's out there. You like to find authors who are new and fresh and different and unique. That's one of the most exciting things to be involved in editing in any kind of literary endeavor, in just my humble opinion. But you do notice that it can be ghettoized very, very quickly. And I think that might even be true in the hard copy small press, because you do have presses with a hard political slant. It might not just be feminist. It could be, you know, it could be some sort of ethnic identity. It could be gender preference. It could be, you know, ageist. Name your identity. Name your
right,
demographic.
Sure.
You know, they can all have a press that represents them. And that's a wonderful thing. But it still seems to balkanize. It still seems to go off in this kind of tribal direction. Why does a place like the old boys club, you know, find its strength in somewhere like the internet small press? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that. You know, maybe it's, I think I floated the idea earlier today that maybe it's, you know, maybe women are more selective about where they want to demonstrate or express their creativity, where
right.
men will just try to get it wherever they can.
Right. Well, that's definitely a theory. I mean, a lot of people have said that. They've said that, you know what, you're looking at the submission and the editorial process, and you're not really looking at the big picture, which is that there are simply differences. I mean, we always hate to generalize. I mean, I hate to generalize, too. But there are a lot of people who say one of the differences is that women just flat out don't submit as much as men to begin with. They're more likely
right.
to be more careful when they're looking for the right fit for their work, you know, and there's the idea men will send it anywhere and don't care as much. There's the idea that women also are not as productive in the sense that They hold on to their work longer. They spend more time editing, crafting it. You know, they don't just sit down and 10 minutes later they send it off somewhere. You know, that there is the idea that women perhaps spend more time on the process, and so they don't have 700 pieces to send out everywhere, and that affects the pool of submissions coming in. I'm going to actually pick up, I think I know who this is, but I'm going to pick up 614 because it's, you know, it's always good to, you know, get another opinion. How are you this evening?
Good, thank you. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. I'm just thinking, like, I love this conversation. I'm glad that it's happening. And, you know, it's hard to tell. Like, it's always hard to tell who is submitting, you know? Like, is it a woman? Is it a man? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, who identifies?
Oh, yeah,
well,
you get all the poets with the initials or with their
right,
persona.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I'm not being flippant, even. Like
no,
even,
I, sure,
who
no, not at all.
To? And, you know, it's hard to tell. And I think that, you know, there is an underrepresentation of women. And I don't know about the small press so much as in general, just of reading. But there are more men, it seems like, men's names that I see. And, you know, I think that mirrors a larger social factor, that the glass ceiling exists outside of the world of poetry. And, you know, it's sort of, it's heavy and it drops down, and we all experience that ceiling, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's everywhere. And then why should we expect the world of poetry to be exempt from that? I mean,
right,
and
I don't think it.
I mean,
right, I think it. Why would we expect it to be different than other,
right,
you know, other areas?
Like,
yeah, I mean that's,
yeah,
that's
right,
true.
Exactly.
That's true.
I mean, it's there. It's everywhere. So, you know, I mean, we'd like to think that, you know, in the world of poetry, we would like to think that we are somehow more evolved than that, or something like that. But, you know, it's not true. You know, I mean, we perpetuate the same thing. You know, and it's good that we're having this discussion, I guess. It's really what I wanted to say. But,
well, and it also,
you know,
I mean, it's something that has been, I mean, it's interested me for a while, but it interested me enough to sort of ask. I mean, go and seek out a few editors, and I mean, it's by no means an exhaustive research, but, you know, just to sort of casually say, you know what, hey, you're editing over there, you know, what do you think, what do you do, what's your remedy for it? And some people have said what Paul said. They said, you know what, I wouldn't go so far as to look at my pile and say, hey, I need to, you know, I need to figure out this, so many women and so many men, and, you know, I have to accept with that in my mind. But some of them will say the remedy that I've come up with is sort of a compromise, maybe, is, you know, there have been times where I've actively tried to reach out to women and said, wow, you know what, that person's been on my radar lately, you know, and she's pretty cool. Maybe I'll send her an email and say, hey, why don't you send something over, and maybe not make a calculated thing, but just simply reach out a little bit, you know. You know, I don't think there's anything even wrong. Well, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that either. You know,
there's not. It's like anything else. It's like, if I don't have enough poetry, I'll try to get some prose. You know what I mean? Like, well, you know, you go out and get something that you're looking. But my limited experience as an editor, I had one experience co-editing a journal once, and it was like, let's just go out and find what we can find, you know? I mean, we need to get some material for this issue, and let's find what we can find. And we were lucky enough to find a whole slew of people who seemed to identify all over the, you know, the spectrum, and we were lucky, I think. We never had to search out and say, like, oh, my God, we're getting, like, you know, 42 men and 2 women. That never seemed to be the case when we were doing that. This is my limited, very limited experience as an editor. But
It depends on your periodical too. It depends on the mission of your periodical. I think that really plays a large portion in
it.
We do see some of the online periodical. I mean, there is an outstanding one called Up the Staircase Quarterly, which is run by April Michelle Broughton, who the fiance of our dear Francis Reardon, and Stephanie Young, I think Stephanie Young Bryant,
right.
who run that particular periodical, which has now been around for quite a few years and hanging in there and doing a good job. I remember, but you know, just and magazines, internet magazines run by females meet the same fate as a lot of the magazines run by the men or by collectives. You know, they've attempted collectives to run internet zines, and it gets to be tough because the work has to be divvied up, and it quickly gets long, and it gets to be long and tedious. And Abigail Bodell in Kansas City ran the Poetry Warrior, you know, and she was doing that by herself, and that was kind of a fun thing going on for a while. But, you know, things happen, and that went by the wayside, and so it would be nice to see more representation just as female publishers, you know, because, you know,
publisher, editor.
I don't know, at the internet level frequently it's the same thing. I mean, we can look at something like Red Fez and say, oh my God, you know, you've got this whole network in place, and it's, you know, and it's still, even within those echelons and ranks, we're still looking for a little more variety, you know.
Right, but even there, it has changed. I mean, you know, there's obviously I'm over there now. But you know, in addition to Michelle, I mean, there's Lindsay, there's Judy, there's Michelle, there's, you know, it is.
And Michelle's a major presence.
Right, and Michelle Quinn as well. And you know, I mean, I'm not, you know, I guess what I'm saying is that even over there, I mean, it is. I mean, I remember hearing, oh, it's like a sausage fest over there, and you know. But see, that brings kind of a point that, I mean, I have mixed feelings on this. However, one of the things that, and I think I mentioned also in that particular article about this, is that at a certain point, do women need to say, you know what, okay, this is the situation, this is the way it is, but we also have to take a certain degree of responsibility for this and get out there and do our own presses and do our own publications. And if we don't like what we see and we don't like the bias and we don't like the climate and the situation, take some ownership of it and say, you know what, let's get the hell out there ourselves. Let's make sure that we're submitting. Let's make sure that we're not kind of, you know, hanging back in the corner complaining, and that we're being proactive and saying, you know what, are we really seeking out, you know, new places and submitting and really making ourselves visible? And that's something, I mean, not to be personal, but that's something that, you know, I've been thinking a lot about, because I am a person that for many years, you know, I very rarely submit. I'm very, I don't want to say bashful about it, but I'm very reluctant, you know. And I said to myself recently, you know what, that's part of the problem. You know, that we're shy sometimes, or that we're afraid of rejection, or we're afraid of putting our work, or being vulnerable, or being judged, or, you know, there are a lot of reasons why sometimes we hold back and we don't really put ourselves and our best feet forward out there, and we don't put ourselves out there. And I think there's this, a little bit of this that, you know, I think there needs to be some boldness there, you know. I do. I think that that's part of it. I'm not sure that that's, I mean, that's a small piece of it, but, you know, yeah. I know what you
think
of that.
That's true for everybody. I mean, if you're, you know, if you want to see your work out there, that's true for everyone. That's a great point in that I thought was in that column was, you know, put your work out there. You know what I mean? Like, put your boots on and get it out there.
Right.
You kind of
have to, and like I said, I'm guilty of that, because this is of kind of a recent change in my thinking. I mean, I've been reluctant. I've been the person that, you know, has, oh well, you know, I'm not ready. I'm still working on it. You know, I have this pile that's 900 pages long, but, you know, it's way up in the air. I have bins under my bed, but no, I'll tell you that. You know, also I have nothing to submit, you know, because there's it's just a strange mindset. And I think that, you know, there has to be a point where we say, you know what, I don't care. Yes, we will be judged. Yes, we will be, you know, you're vulnerable. But you know what, so what? So what? There are people that won't like it, and you will be rejected. And it's, you know, but so what? You know?
Yeah.
Do it anyway. Yeah. You know, tough skin a little bit, maybe.
Well, there's something to this, believe it or not, this ties back to our old Bukowski episode, because, you know, there's, and,
no,
you know, Bukowski has to be given some credit. It does.
No, it doesn't.
It does, because it can't do it. Don't bring that crusty old misogynist into the discussion. Oh, he is a crusty old misogynist, but what I mean, I he was not as misogynist.
It's not
about Bukowski. What I'm talking about is he had this strategy, you know, this thing. He promotes this sort of romantic notion that I think is very macho, in that if you just, you know, we were talking about doing it, strapping on the boots, buckling up, getting ready to ride it out, bitch, and that was his strategy. He did that for years and years and years.
Oh.
He submitted to everything. That's how he got the nickname the King of the Small Press. And then he went, and sooner or later he showed up in everything. And he credits that with just getting out there, that, you know, that eventually led to him being able to support himself primarily as a writer, which, you know, a lot of guys who are sitting here, you know, holding up with their computers, that's kind of a fantasy, you know. It's like, man, I should just be able to get paid. I should just be able to make a living off my brilliant musings and storytelling and da-da-da. And if I just do it the way Bukowski did it, that's going to happen for me too. And it's a very, you know, and that's a romance. That's sort of a counter-romance to the Beats in a way, but no less passionate, no less. It still speaks to sort of an American sociopathic archetype, if you will.
Well, it does and it doesn't.
Well,
it also speaks to perseverance.
Perseverance is fine, but sometimes perseverance goes too far too, don't you think?
Oh, well, yeah, of course it does, but I think that. I don't know. I think I've changed my view on that, though, because I think that, you know, I don't know. I think sitting in your house waiting for things to come to you, waiting for things to happen in your life, I think is a very – it wastes your time, and I think it's really – you know, the odds are against you to begin with, and it's sort of like – I mean, it's sort of like the lottery. I mean, the odds are against you, but if you sit in your house and you don't, you know, play, which I don't, but, you know, you're definitely not going to get anywhere with it. And anything that's a long shot, most things that people dream about doing and that, you know, most things are a long shot. But, you know, the best way to make sure it never happens is to sit in your house and complain about it and be bitter about it and take that bitterness and, you know, let it keep you paralyzed, you know.
Sure.
I think, what about the beautiful garden that someone grows in their backyard out of cement and glass and some kind of weird sculptures, you know what I mean? Like, and should we be able to see that sometime? I mean, like, you don't have to be Bukowski. I mean, you can be somewhere in the middle, you know what I mean? Like, between, like, Howard Finster and Bukowski, somewhere in the middle. You know what I mean? Like, you can grow your own garden, and you can send out pictures of it, and... you know, maybe some people will read that or see that, and maybe they won't. But if you're dreaming of fame, then you shouldn't write poetry.
Right.
You know?
I know. I agree with that.
You know,
and I agree with the extreme thinking.
Fame,
I do.
Then,
you know.
You know, you shouldn't write poetry then. That's, you know, that's your fault. But
right. And I don't think.
If you read your stuff, you can do something about it and maybe try to get it out there. You know?
I think that's true. I don't think it's a choice between obscurity on one end of the spectrum or, you know, you're the poet laureate either. I think that most people are going to fall somewhere in there, you know. Some are going to be more successful than others. And some people, honestly, you know, have different people skills. I mean, there are some people that are talented as hell, but, you know, their personalities, they can't, you know, they can't get along with other people. They can't, you know, handle an event. They can't seem to...
I hardly ever leave the house myself.
Yeah, well, no, and I understand that, but I'm telling you, but there are some people that are just so destructive and so toxic to any community or you know, environment that they get involved with, that regardless of their talent and regardless of their ability to sort of deliver the goods, that, you know, they'll be excluded simply because their personalities suck and they can't handle, you know, so I think that there are a lot of different things, you know, but and that's very sad. But, you know, regardless, you have to, like I said, you still have to, I think, a little bit of this is taking responsibility for getting yourself out there, getting your, you know, getting your work out there. And, you can't, I don't think that you can point the fingers at, oh, well, you know why? It's because small press is male dominated. Oh, if I don't write about, you know, cocks and breasts all day, then nobody's going to publish me. If I don't look hot on Facebook, then nobody's ever going to, then no one's ever going to take anything that I do seriously. No one will pay attention to me if I don't, you know, if I don't.
But you can't deny that phenomenon either. You can't deny that when the tone of the prose pieces tends towards the more confessional and graphic, it does get a lot more play. It does get a lot more attention, and that's, you know, that is something that's reflected in the scene as well.
Right. I'm going to pick up 701 too, but I'm going to keep, you know, I'm going to keep everybody on. How about that? We could do that.
no cut.
So we have. We're
no
adding.
No cut. Of pure anarchy on this show, man.
Well,
not pure.
Freewheeling, but I have 701 on. I hope you're still there. I'm sorry about the wait and the,
I just called 2 seconds ago.
Oh, well, then we're good. Good. Well, then we're very pleased with our prompt, courteous service then.
Excellent.
We should have asked April to be on the show tonight since we're talking about women in the small press. Would she be willing to talk about this, Frank?
Probably not.
Yeah,
no.
Not into it.
She lost her camera tonight, so she's in a bad mood.
Oh, well.
So she probably wouldn't want to talk.
Well, maybe we could get her on a show at another time. Not tonight, necessarily.
Yeah, you could ask her. I'm sure she would definitely do one if she had advance.
I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, I think one of the things I think we sort of talked about doing is, you know, maybe sort of planning a few guests here and there, sort of in advance, as a way to sort of organize it a little bit, because, you know, just so that, you know, we have a few people that are definitely interested in a particular topic, and, you know, I don't know, maybe that might be good to sort of have some guests and do it that way. But yeah, I mean, I think what we were sort of talking about and getting into a little bit, and actually next week deals sort of with that idea a little bit more, the idea of the male aesthetic, and that's sort of, as usual, that's a little bit controversial, because there are some people that say, oh, there's no such thing. But I mean, let's just be open and honest here. There are publications, and they have the right to enjoy a particular tone of a piece, but there are some that are more transgressive, that are more interested in pieces that are, you know, a little more in your face, a little more sexual, graphic, that whole thing. And, you know, there are some women that have said, you know, to me, you know, they've said, you know, if I don't write that way, and that's not my thing, if I write about, you know, mosquitoes and mountains and things, you know, it's very difficult in this world to be noticed. So I don't know, Frank, what do you think?
I don't think so at all. I think that I just think that person's not digging deep enough. There's plenty of magazines that deal in things like natures or mosquitoes. I mean, I think, to be honest with you, maybe be different in the internet world, but on the outside, I think a majority of those larger magazines, like, I don't know, I'm just throwing one out there, like Alaskan Press or Hunger Mountain or something, would be a lot more interested in mosquitoes and mountains than per se the ones that I know of, like, you know.
Right.
No,
I agree.
There's plenty for everything. It's just that they don't have the like I heard him talking earlier about like Paul, I think about like the macho-ness of certain writers, like you don't get that if you're talking about a male, you don't get that like you would from a Jeffers, as you would a Charles Bukowski type of person. Like certain type of people are in your face while others are just like, whatever, I'm just going to sit here and watch the ocean or something. Like, you know, like people who are not the in-your-face kind of women, and as opposed to the laid-back ones, aren't going to, you know, be like, hey, me, or something. I mean, do you guys get what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I think that's true. And I think that's a very good point about finding publications that match what you're doing. And I think that maybe, you know, and again, there's a little bit of personal responsibility there. You know, you do have the responsibility to, you know, get out there and seek out, you know, the presses and publications that do match what you're doing. And I do get the idea that, you know, there are a lot of women that say, well, if you're not a certain type of writer, but that's only in one category. I mean, you know, you really, I think, have to take responsibility and, you know, then find nature journals,
I wanted to say, I called in mainly because something you said about, staying at home as opposed to going out there. I don't know if you mean that as more towards the writing aspect of it, or like trying to sell yourself like a band or something, but I think that is more like 90-10. I think 90% of what you do as a writer should be at your house. That's my opinion,
yeah.
Whether male or female.
10%
travel,
yeah.
because I mean, you know, we can't all afford to like go to these places.
Right.
No, I think that's true.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're not rock stars. We're not jet setters. We're not people that have the means to. And you know, and I want to. And I certainly don't mean that you should spend 5 minutes at your desk writing and the rest of the time, you know, putting on a dress,
right.
and you know, going to wine and cheese, and you know, it's not a social act. And I think that sometimes part of the problem writers have is that it does become too much of a social act. It becomes too much, you know, it becomes too much of an outlet for socialization and not enough time being spent at the desk doing the work. I think we've all had days where we've said, damn, you know, I like pissed away 5 hours. You know, I was on Facebook. You know, I sat down to try to, you know, finish this story, and before I knew it, I was on Facebook, then I was on chat, and then I was answering email, and then I was caught up in this moron's, you know, drama. And
right.
And how many times have you said to yourself, you know what, I don't write because I can't control those distractions. And you do
right.
have to do that. I think there is a time where you should say, you know what, yeah, it is something you do in your house. But by the same token, I think it's very difficult in this modern situation, this modern culture where, you know, everything is like cross-branding. And I hate to say that about poetry.
Yeah.
That makes me sick. It makes me throw up in my mouth to say that. But it's like that's where we're heading as a culture, you know, where, you know, you have to read, you have to, God, you have to make a CD of your spoken word and your, you know.
Yeah. No,
and it's all
really
and it's all to launch yourself into
all.
Another career that has nothing to do with poetry.
Well,
yeah,
isn't that,
like,
and isn't that funny?
They want to make you an actor. They want to make you a singer. But they want, but you know, for God's sake, you have to give up the chapbooks because they're just, you know, they're not big ticket items, you know.
Yeah, right. There's a Schopenhauer said, if you can't stand 5 minutes alone in a room with yourself, then you shouldn't do anything else or something like that. I can't remember. You need to be able to stand 5 minutes alone in a room with yourself. You need to be at least doing that.
Yeah. No, so I think
that's
true.
Is Frank, did you post about the Dream Songs on Facebook tonight? Can I mention that?
I just quoted a chunk of a poem from Berryman, and I'm pretty infamous for taking down my posts like 10 minutes after I put them up.
Yes,
so
you are.
I'm sorry. Can I mention it? Can I still mention it? Oh,
no, it doesn't exist anymore. It went down the memory hole.
Yeah, it's in the ethers.
I read that book every day. I read the Dream Songs every day.
I don't think you need to to necessarily burn CDs and stuff like that. I think there's a huge, huge market out there for writing. I'm not saying, like, poetry's going to, you know, make you rich. Of course not, but I think when it comes down to the actual stuff, it's books, whether it be chapbooks or perfect bound books, whatever. You're never going to catch me unless I'm, like, dying and it's the last 10 days of my life making a CD of myself. Like, yeah. I don't know. I'm too shy for that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, but I think what I'm saying is that even among, I mean, what you see are a lot of people, a lot of writers, a lot of people that are, I mean, legendary people that have, oh, well, now we'll start a school and we'll lecture and we'll get paid to go speak at a college. We'll get paid to do, you know, workshops where, you know, you don't even see the person.
My videos. Yeah.
And, you know, or, and then they get into, you know, doing blogging. And I'm not knocking that. I'm not. Everybody has to do what they
yeah,
need
I
to
do.
Do, you know.
Blogging
you know?
Would be one thing, I think.
No,
I don't
and,
know.
It,
I think,
and there's no, I don't
but
have a
blogging
what I'm
is
saying
nothing
is,
but words.
But what I'm saying is that there is that I think there's an expectation that you have to get involved
right.
in a whole bunch of things. You know, it's sort of like the hot topic model of American culture. You know, you have to write a book that can be made into a movie, which can have a soundtrack, which could somehow the
yeah.
ultimate goal of the American artist now
right.
is to end up on a T-shirt in Hot Topic. You know, that's
yeah.
it's like that's where we're headed, and it's sort of a franchise mentality. You know, I mean, you know, where
right.
that's.
Hey, you know, some of us want to be an interview
about.
Magazine, okay?
You want your
there you go. There you
no, but you know,
Paul Coleman Roberts is going to start his own Naropa school, like the Paul Coleman Roberts.
I know, man, far out, dude. I'm going to totally do it. I'm
well,
going to pick up
can...
the ashes of New College, and we're going to rise like a phoenix. That's what I'll call it. I'll call it Phoenix University. That's not
wait
thing,
a minute.
Oh,
sure
yeah,
that's
wait.
Taken.
I'm going to go to Phoenix because I need a job as a dental hygienist. I need one.
Hygienist. Well, how about a dental hygienist that recites poetry? How about that?
Yes.
We
yes.
have a program. We'll do
out
we'll
of
develop
other
a major now.
I will make poetry come out of other people's mouths. No, 20 years
we better
ago.
Sign
when
some,
I was
we better
in school,
sign some waivers and releases, buddy, for talking
yeah,
about people's
yeah.
mouths.
20 years ago when I was in school, they called it professionalism. They said,
right.
you all need to be professionalized, you know, and this was a literature school. So,
professionalized.
Yeah, I went to
literature.
Literature school. Yeah.
Right.
So they said, you all need to be professionalized, so you need to get, you know, dossiers and, you know, CVs and all this stuff and learn how to, you know, go to seminars and go to conferences. And spend all your hard-earned cash that we give you, which was, you know, your stipend for the month, on flying across the country to, you know, conferences that were about bullshit, that were just total bullshit, you know, about literature. And that's what you need to do. And then eventually you'll get enough money where you can have a house. Yeah, all right.
Eventually.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Eventually, assuming the school's budget, the school's liberal arts budget doesn't dry up.
That you spend. Yeah, going
maybe
to
a Lincoln
conferences.
Log
yeah.
house.
It's bullshit, man. Bullshit.
Lincoln log house.
Yeah,
well, that would
exactly.
be far more affordable, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Legos. You could go rent down in Legoland.
Yeah. Or logs
oh,
made
man.
Out of Abraham Lincoln. You know, literally made out of Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, actually.
Exactly.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I don't claim to have the answer to the best way, but I will say that the idea of sort of this affirmative action of maybe, you know, editors saying, well, we need to take so many pieces because we need more women or we need more men. I personally don't like that idea because I think that it moves us away from merit. It moves us away from our discretion and our focus on the work, and it puts us more toward focusing on gender and personalities and what you look like and
yes,
whether,
yes.
you know, it, I think it pushes us
yeah.
in a more shallow and superficial direction
right.
away from the work when we start doing that. When we start saying, oh, let's
yeah.
count up how many chicks and how many guys, I think we're actually going in
people,
the wrong direction,
you know,
is my view.
Yeah, there's the poor people journal, you know. I'll be in the. I've been poor my whole life. Where's the poor people journal?
I sound like the analogy of like having a job where like I think it should be the best man or woman or whoever, you know, for the job.
Right.
I shouldn't like lose my job because they don't have like a certain amount of women in the job.
Right.
I think
right.
whoever writes
you
the
know,
better piece
like,
should fit it, like or whoever does
yeah.
the better job or whatever.
But I think it's ironic, though, that the solution that a lot of people propose to focusing on gender and is to focus on gender. So, you know, you're concerned about people evaluating and judging you based on being a female or a male, and your solution is to tell them, well, now we want you to focus on what sex they are.
Yeah,
I mean, it seems backwards
right.
to me. It's, you know, like that's
bad,
why I say
yeah.
it's sort of the wrong direction, I think.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I don't like that idea. And I thought about it for a long time because I do know people that have said, you know, look, I literally sit here and I count them up and I try to have balance.
Really?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or they'll say, you know what, I don't think that it's right to do that, but I do it because I don't want to be criticized. I don't want to get that email from
what
Lynn Alexander.
What is it saying, like, rich people
no.
and poor people are going to pick? Who are the poor ones? Let's pick 13 poor ones and 14 rich ones. Let's do that. Let's have a journal.
Right. Well, you could
and
say
and
that.
Have them find, have them interspersed within each other so you can compare
oh,
them
yeah.
compare
you
and
know,
contrast
whatever.
Immediately.
I don't care if they're spotted or whatever. Just poor and rich. Just poor and rich journal.
Oh yeah! Oh, the back and forth—that'd be fantastic. You'd see the schism of America in one publication there.
There you go, Occupy Journal. There you go.
Right.
Occupy. Unfortunately, I think somebody's got that already.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Too bad.
Yeah, probably.
Not that you can't do your own. I mean, you know, we're talking about DIY is the answer here. I think. You know, it seems to me that's kind of the feeling that we have. I mean, that's to be expected. I mean, it's hard to sit here and build up an agenda around affirmative action when you're basically saying, you know, it's really up to us as individuals. It's up to us to take the individual responsibility. You know, that's the classic
yeah,
conservative
really.
American tack, and it's not all
right.
wrong. And it's not all wrong, but
right.
we can't have a commitment to at least, you know, you're talking about tending a garden earlier and you know, the amazing artistic gardens that we can build. And one of the things we can do is we can keep an eye open for those talents out there, those people that you see are willing to go for it and are willing
yes.
to be that different
right.
voice. And it's
no,
important to...
Right.
It's important to encourage that, and even if you can recruit it. But it's true. And at the end of the day, you can't force it. You can only try to enable and encourage and create the environment where that sort of thing is gonna flourish.
We can only hope.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
You're one thing that drives me nuts, and I'll just say
hope.
It is that, you know, you mentioned that personal responsibility is often associated with like this conservative right wing. You know what?
Right,
that bothers
yeah.
me. It bothers me that the
I didn't,
right.
I didn't say. You know what?
No,
Lynn,
I don't mean
no
you.
Point did I say right wing?
No,
I
don't mean
I didn't
you.
Say right wing.
I'm saying that. Well, I thought you mentioned it being a conservative idea of personal responsibility.
But I mean, but not in the sense
right.
of right.
Well, and I'm
left.
not attacking you. I'm just saying that I think. I feel sort
both
of
the words,
to a certain
both the
extent.
Terms conservative and liberal, both the terms conservative and liberal have deeper, far meaningful meanings that go back
well,
that have historical precedent. Where these
that's
were not,
not
insults.
What I'm
they
saying.
Were not
but that's,
insults
I'm not,
to
that's
okay.
not what I'm even getting into. I'm just saying that
sorry,
I feel
right.
I think that sometimes personal responsibility is associated with a conservative point of view, which I think has been hijacked because I think that we need to sort of
yeah.
take back the idea of personal responsibility being, you know, kind of a left idea because it's an idea that gives people credit. And in other words,
yeah.
I give women enough credit to say, you know what, I think that you can get out there and get your work published without a quota, you know, because it's good.
Yeah.
You know, I think what I'm saying about the personal responsibility thing is I think actually that it is empowering and gives people
mm-hmm.
as individuals the credit. It's almost like you're saying, you know what, I don't think
mm-hmm.
I have to help you. I think that you can help yourself with this, you know, to a certain extent. I think that you can, you know, make a lot of changes for yourself, you know, with this. And I think we have to sort of take that back. I'm just, I don't mean to get on your ass, Paul. I'm just saying that, you know, I don't like that personal responsibility has become something that's, you know, conservative. I think, you know, that's my thing. I'm sorry.
That was really good.
We don't need each other. We don't need each other, right? I mean, you can say, you don't need to do this, you know?
No,
there's
love,
but we don't need to do this.
I think we need one another. We need the support of one another. But one of the problems is that, you know, we're very fond of saying, you know, this is how people should parent and this is how women should act. And we're so good at getting in other people's faces and saying, oh, we want freedom and the right to do what we want. Oh, but we're going to tell you how to do that. Part of my thing with this whole issue of female representation and women in small press is, I guess what I've come away with is the sense that, you know what, I don't want your help. I don't want you to take something of mine simply because you need another woman. I don't want, you know, I don't want that to be the reason. I don't want to be diminished as a person, as a writer, as an artist, whatever it is I'm doing. I don't want to be diminished and reduced down to being a token, you know. That's I guess that's where I'm coming from with all of this.
Yeah. Why do you want to be needed? You know what I mean? Like, ultimately, you want to do it on your own, not be needed to do it. You know?
Right. That how mortified would you be if somebody said, well, you know what? You know, I actually...
As a white man from Central Ohio, yes, we're taking your poem. Yeah, that's awesome.
Right.
Thanks.
You know,
take
or,
all of
well,
them.
You know,
I've
we...
I've got a bunch of... I've got a whole pile. Oh, yeah, take all of them. Yeah, the Central Ohio white male in his, you know, early 40s. Oh, yeah, get all of them. Get them out.
Brother, can you say swing voter? Swing voter!
Yeah.
You got you got purple all over
vote.
You.
Oh,
right.
The swing voter
no.
and the swing...
They would
I swing,
know where
but
I
don't
live.
Vote.
If I voted, they would know where I live.
I know there's swingers in Ohio.
I
know there's swingers in Dayton.
I
know there's swingers in Dayton. Oh yeah, I know it for a fact.
That's
I think there's swingers everywhere. You know, even in Minot.
Dayton are different than. Yeah, I don't. That's different than swing voters, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he's referring
no?
to swing voters. Yeah.
Swing voters.
Okay,
that's
okay.
correct. That's correct.
I thought that Paul Coleman Roberts was talking about swingers in general.
Yeah, that's what I thought
party.
Too. I was like, what? He's like, I've been the swingers in Dayton.
We don't.
I'm
we
like,
don't.
What?
I don't know.
Like,
I don't know what you're talking about, Frank. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't.
I'm like what?
I don't know anyone in Dayton.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know either. I don't even know. Actually. No, I don't
you
know.
You mentioned Minot. Where is Minot?
The end of the world.
Anyway,
it's mine.
They're all going to take my poems, right? Because I'm, living in a swing state.
Yeah, well, you know what?
Well,
I think that whether you live in Ohio or whether you're a man or a woman.
Anymore, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm just gonna make poems. I'm going to sew poems onto suit coats and wear them out in town. I'm just going to go down to the diner and wear my suit coat of poems, and that's what I will do. That's
you know, there was a woman in London, and she actually had, there was one who pushed around a cart.
Ideas. Why can I have one original idea?
Well, she actually she didn't do it with writing, she did it with art. She had a walking gallery where she had artwork.
Kind of original, then.
Yeah, she had artwork kind of like on her back. And because I had sent some things to her because, you know, I love this idea. And, yeah, she would put artwork on her, like kind of on the back of her, like, raincoat. And, because her idea was, get it out of the galleries and into the street because people will see it when they're walking around. Yeah, I love that idea.
You cannot look at me. You have to look at me now.
Well, you know what? Because it's sort of the idea of taking art
right.
out of the building and into the street.
Right.
Same thing with,
no,
with a lot of these little awesome. Magazines that I do. I do all these little books
yeah.
and I leave them in laundromats and all kinds of crazy places. And part of the idea is, you know, to get it out into the world. You know,
I think that's true. I used to have a friend, and we coordinated getting poems out into the world like that.
Yeah,
so
you're not that far
yeah.
from me, so we need to like meet up and, you know, get a,
yeah.
a bunch of paper and some staples and, you know, we need to
yeah.
have, you know, yeah, we need to like come up with some stuff here and maybe get together on some things because you're not that far
yeah.
and yeah, we could
like
go on. I'm right, Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. Oh, you're
yeah.
in Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so, yeah, we could, like, you know, dress up in ninja suits and put little magazines and pamphlets and poems in all kinds of crazy
go.
Places, yeah.
And have somebody videotape it.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Oh, wait,
yeah,
no,
well,
branding. Yeah. Oh, sorry, no, sorry, I didn't mean to brand. My bad.
No, I definitely want to be on videotape on the Internet. That's my goal. I want to be videotaped and be broadcast on the Internet. That's what I would
yeah.
love to do.
I've been a little bit disturbed by the few videos that I have on the internet.
I want to do vegetable soup.
There,
no, but we should get together and
I think
let me know about that.
Yeah,
and
we should definitely do that. And it shouldn't be something that we just talk about and say, yeah, we'll do that. Because I have like 150 people that, yeah, we'll do it. I want
you're
you
right.
to be the person where we actually will do this, and we will. You're like the experiment in follow through, you know, where we really are seriously good.
Why am I always the experiment? Always, yeah.
Everybody's an experiment. If you
there
live on
you
planet
go.
Earth, you're an experiment. Believe me.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, you don't know how many people, you know, probably would, you know, if they could hear this right now, would say, "Oh, thank God," because you know that idea that she tried to talk me into for like, mm-hmm. you know, like poor Pat King today. I was roping Pat King into things today, and he'd probably be sitting there going, "Oh, thank God, she found somebody else to, you know, actually make them commit." You know, I'll just blow her off some more. We're never really going to get together and make this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But no, I want you to be the person where
right.
we follow
I'll
through and we do this.
Right.
So
before our show goes off the air, did you want me to read a comment from Mr. Tim Murray on the Project U
sure.
Facebook page here?
Yeah.
Tim Murray says, "I'd like to know more about the contents of the bins under Lynn Alexander's bed." I don't know that I can speak to
what
that,
did,
but I do think that...
What did he say? Because we just got the 90-second warning, so...
I said, "I'd like to know more about the contents of the bins under Lynn Alexander's bed." And I can't speak to those bins, but I think you can.
Well,
oh, did I? Well, there was that stuff I sent you.
Can I just have
I'm not in Pittsburgh. I don't know where you keep that stuff.
I am beet red right now. I can't even talk. Oh, my God.
One more shout-out for Frank Reardon, for John Berryman. Thank you. That was a great
Frank's cool. You have no idea how many things I've discovered and or rediscovered that I hadn't thought about because
I'm ignoring
Frank
all that.
Reardon.
So I'm ignoring
I'm
saying,
I think when
Frank
Reardon takes
Reardon.
His post down off of Facebook, they go underneath into bins underneath Mark Zuckerberg's bed. That's where Frank's posts go.
Awesome. That's where my book went. I need to find my book. All
right,
I'll be there tonight.
Right. It's not under my
Good
bed.
Good night, all. Good night.
Good night.
Right.
Enjoy your olives.
Right.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you. And this has been another hour of your life
you'll never get back.
My doctor, it'll be another episode. It was another episode. As I tell my doctor, that will be another episode. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and next week is the idea
Another
of the male
episode.
Aesthetic. Yeah, and you are absolutely welcome to join in on that. We will post about it and a little bit about what we mean there because It's a little
crazy. Oh, yes, that'll be controversial. We'll kick up a lot of hoopla around that one. We'll get a lot of people tuning in.
Good luck catching me as I run down the street. I'll be running down. For that one, I'll be running down the street.
Right?
We'll be waiting to catch you.
We'll
yes,
see.
You'll be running down the street.
All right.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Oh, Mr.